Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Gideon's Snare. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. In the book of Judges, we have been studying this brief record of the early history, the first four centuries or so of the history of the land of Israel. And we see the leaders God chose, the judges who ruled under Jehovah the King. Through the lives and work of these judges, we can learn about God's works and ways. And we have been considering the career of Gideon, the fifth judge. Last time we saw that Gideon and his 300 soldiers had caught up with and captured the two captains, Zeba and Zalmunna, of the invading Midianite army, in spite of the fact that even after their defeat, Zeba and Zalmunna had a vastly superior force to Gideon's 300. While they were on their way to capture Zeba and Zalmunna, Gideon had asked two Israelite cities to offer his men food and aid, and they had refused, basically mocking them, that they would never defeat Zeba and Zalmunna. So when Gideon returned, he punished these two cities for their mockery and their refusal. But now he needs to decide what to do with his two noble prisoners from Midian. So we're on Judges chapter 8 and verse 18. And he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, "What kind of men were they whom you killed at Tabor?" So they answered, "As you are, so were they. Each one resembled the son of a king." So he asks Zeba and Zalmunna about something. He asks them about the kind of men, and he uses the word Enosh for mortal men, which is appropriate when you're talking about killing them. But he asks what kind of men they were that they slew at Tabor. Tabor means mound, and it was a mountain in Israel. I understand that there is a gun today that's named the Tabor. It comes out of Israel, an Israelite gun. But they had killed some men at Tabor, and he asked them what kind of men they were. And they answered, "As you, so they." They see each one resembled the son of a king. So they say, "They looked like you, Gideon. All of them looked like the sons of a king. They all look like princes." Well, this tells us something about Gideon's appearance. You know, we've seen Gideon when the Lord came to him and told him, "I'm going to use you to conquer Israel." His cowardly words, he was the least important in his father's family, and his family was the least important in his tribe, and his tribe wasn't very important in Israel. I mean, he downplayed himself. But these captured captains say that Gideon looks like a prince. Now, this is interesting, this mention of them killing men at Tabor, because we haven't read about this earlier. We didn't read about them killing men at Tabor or anything like that. Well, that's common in the Bible. The Bible doesn't always have to say something and then say it again. Sometimes it tells us this way. People are talking about something after it happened, and even though the Bible didn't tell you when it happened, you know, it tells you about it later as it's being reviewed. So the Bible doesn't always have to go into great detail. The Lord is writing his words, but he's not wasting words. Everything he writes is important. So sometimes he doesn't tell us about something until somebody's talking about it after the fact. We can be just as sure it happened that way as if the Bible had actually in the historical record told about it earlier. So that shouldn't trouble us. Well, Gideon replies, verse 19, "Then he said, 'They were my brothers, the sons of my mother. As the Lord lives, if you had let them live, I would not kill you.'" So he reveals that these men they had killed at Tabor were actually his own brothers. And he calls them the sons of his mother. Now, we might get a little confused there and say, well, does that mean that they were his half-brothers? They were his mother's sons, but not his father's sons? Well, no, that's not what it means, that they're his half-brothers. But remember, common in Israel at this time, unfortunately, was polygamy, this idea of multiple wives. So if a man had multiple wives, he would have many half-brothers and sisters, who are his father's children, but not his mother's. So when you said, "My brothers, the sons of my mother," you actually meant your full brothers. Because, of course, even if your father had other wives, these were the sons of your mother. So he doesn't mean his half-brothers. He means his full brothers. And he emphasizes it by saying the sons of his mother. Well, then he goes on to swear by the Lord himself that if these two captains had spared his brothers when they had the chance to at Tabor, he would not have killed them now. But now he's going to execute them because they did this. Verse 20, and he said to Jether, his firstborn, rise, kill them. But the youth would not draw his sword, for he was afraid because he was still a youth. So Gideon speaks to his firstborn, Jether. Jether means abundance. And he tells Jether to execute them. Now this tells us a little something about how old Gideon might have been. We have had no indication up till now. We might have imagined him as a very young man. But now we see that he actually had a son old enough to be in the army with him. But his son is called a youth, a boy. And the word there is used for a young man of 20 or less. Could be a very young boy, up to about 20. So we would probably say that he was a teenager, probably a teenager. And yet old enough to carry a sword and to fight with him in the army. And I would guess maybe that Jether was one of his 300, had been with him. And notice they're armed now. They do have swords. But Jether is his firstborn, so it's not like his youngest. So Gideon isn't super old, but he might be 40. Or in his late 30s. You know, they would get married fairly young. A young man might get married around 18 back then. So his firstborn, he might be 19 or so. This young man's a teenager. He might be in his 30s. But his son is just a boy. He's a youth. And so even though he has a sword, he's afraid to execute someone. Well, execution is kind of a nasty thing. I guess I can't blame him for being reluctant to do it. Verse 21. So Ziba and Zalmunna said, rise yourself and kill us. For as a man is, so is his strength. So Gideon arose and killed Ziba and Zalmunna, and took the crescent ornaments that were on their camels' necks. So Ziba and Zalmunna themselves speak up at this point, and they goad Gideon to do it himself. They say, go into action. That's what they mean by rise. They don't mean he was lying down, or sitting, even sitting down. But they say, go into action and kill us. You know, as a man, so is his strength. Show that you're the strong one. Now understand their motivation in doing this is that if one was going to be killed in war, one would want to be killed by a mighty man, by a hero. Your glory in being killed would be how great the one was who killed you. And that was why we saw back in the days of Barak, when a man was killed by a woman, that was considered a shame, a dishonor, because women weren't warriors. They weren't considered warlike. So the mightier the person who killed you, the greater your glory and death. So if you're going to be killed, you might as well be killed by some mighty hero. So they say, if we're going to die, you kill us, Gideon. And they figure then at least we'll be killed by a mighty man. So Gideon does it. He goes into action and he himself executes Ziba and Zalmunna. And he takes for himself the spoil, the crescent ornaments that are on their camels' necks. So that is the end of Gideon's campaign against Midian. And this nation, this neighbor nation, descended from Abraham through his wife after Sarah's death, Keturah, tried to wipe out their brother nation of Israel. And they got severely defeated and punished for it. Then now we come to Gideon's judgeship in verse 22. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, rule over us, both you and your son, and your grandson also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian. Well, it was true Gideon was going to rule over them. He was God's choice as their next judge. But see, these men of Israel, they don't want him to just be a judge. They want him to be a king. And this was the big difference between a judge and a king, is that a king's sons would reign after him. They would become the next king and so forth. So it was the whole family ruling over them, rather than just a man being judge, and at his death, it moves to some other family, some other man. So this might have been a temptation to Gideon, but Gideon, thankfully, stands up to the temptation. Verse 23, but Gideon said to them, I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. So Gideon refuses the crown, and he refuses it for the very best of reasons. Why? Well, because he knows who Israel's true king is. It is Jehovah. Their God was to be their king. And the judge was his appointed representative, his prime minister. But for the prime minister to try to take the place of king, if Gideon did that, that would be rebellion against the Lord. And it wouldn't have been right for him to claim any such thing. So Gideon acts very well in refusing this. He says, no, have you forgotten? The Lord is your king. Don't ask his judge to be your king. So good for Gideon for doing that. Verse 24, then Gideon said to them, I would like to make a request of you, that each of you would give me the earrings from his plunder. For they had golden earrings, because they were Ishmaelites. So Gideon requests that they give him the golden earrings that they have all collected from the spoil. Now the word here is not so specific. It could also mean nose rings. Because understand, nose rings are not just a modern phenomenon. Nose rings were around in ancient times. They were just uncommon in our society up till some few decades ago. So Gideon wants the earrings or the nose rings, hard to tell which, from the spoil. And we read that these Midianites that they had conquered had these earrings or nose rings because they were Ishmaelites. Now this has confused some people, and they say it's a contradiction. How could Midianites, the descendants from Abraham through Keturah, be Ishmaelites, the sons of Abraham through Sarah's maid Hagar? Well, I don't think this should be too difficult for us. Obviously, this is saying that not all Midianites were Ishmaelites. If it's telling us specifically that these Midianites were Ishmaelites, it should tell us that all Midianites were not. And probably what happened is that Midian himself married the daughter of his half-brother. That would not have been uncommon at all back then. In fact, Sarah, Abraham's wife, was Abraham's half-sister. So Abraham had done the same thing. So for Midian to marry his half-sister, Ishmael's daughter, would not have been unusual. And so therefore, Midian's children were, through this particular wife, were included in Ishmael's tribe. Whereas Midian maybe had other kids through other wives that weren't included in Ishmael's tribe. So these Midianites wore these earrings or nose rings because Ishmaelites did, apparently. Verse 25, so they answered, we will gladly give them. And they spread out a garment, and each man threw into it the earrings from his plunder. So the Israelites are happy to grant Gideon's request after all he's done to save them from the Midianites, and ultimately from being wiped out, which is what the Midianites were trying to do. So they set out a garment and spread it out like a cloth, and they throw into it all these earrings or nose rings that they've collected. So they give these up all for Gideon. Verse 26, now the weight of the gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescent ornaments, pendants, and purple robes which were on the kings of Midian, and beside the chains that were around their camels' necks. So we read the weight of these gold earrings, and since we don't know how much a shekel weighs, we don't know for sure what this means. Now, not only so, but notice that shekels, at least in the New King James Version I'm using, is in italics, showing that there is no word shekel in Hebrew. So it just says the weight was 1,700 of gold. It doesn't tell us what of gold. So we have to just guess that it was a shekel. But if it was a shekel, that means this was over 65 pounds of gold. And that's a lot of gold. Now it's just these earrings or nose rings. So this doesn't include the rest of the spoil, which was what? These crescents that they all wore, apparently, these crescent ornaments, the pendants that they were wearing, the purple robes that they were wearing on the kings of Midian, and purple was always the royal color of nobility, and then the chains that were around their camels' necks, their camels' decorations, were part of the spoil too. So Gideon didn't ask for that, just these rings. Well, that was fine. Gideon could get wealthy off his glorious victory. But notice what he does with his gold. Verse 27, then Gideon made it into an ephod and set it up in his city, Ophrah. And all Israel played the harlot with it there. It became a snare to Gideon and to his house. So Gideon makes an ephod with this gold. Now that might not tell you much if you don't know what an ephod is. An ephod, understand, is a priestly garment. And we understand that the priest's ephod had a pocket or pouch in it in which the Urim and the Tumim were kept, which was a means of contacting God. So Gideon had them make a golden garment. How in the world do you do that? Make a golden thing you can wear. Might be kind of a harness or something. It wouldn't be like a shirt made out of gold. So why would Gideon do this? This was a bad thing, obviously. The Lord says it became a snare to him in his house. Well, Bullinger in his companion Bible speculates that Gideon might have known that the priests were lax in the restoring of the true worship of God. And so he thought, well, I have to do it myself. And so he makes a priestly garment for himself, hoping that he can do what the priests aren't doing and turn the people back toward God by making himself a kind of priest. But the problem was that this was not according to God's command. He is of the tribe of Manasseh, not the priestly tribe at all. And he's certainly not of the family of Aaron, the priestly family. So this was contrary to God. And it just emphasizes what we believe is one of the themes of the book of Judges. And that is that during this time, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, in some ways, this would be good because it meant maximum freedom in Israel. There was no strong central government, just like the United States used to be when we had no strong central government. And the power was much more in the hands of the people and the individual communities to do as they thought was right. So it was maximum freedom. But the problem was when this do whatever is right in your own eyes was applied to religion. They were not supposed to do that regarding religion. They were supposed to do what God had commanded. So when Gideon does what's right in his own eyes and makes a priestly garment for himself, an ephod of gold, well, it just becomes a snare to him and his household. And God considers this actually a rival to his true worship. So he says, Israel went and played the harlot with this ephod. And remember, harlotry or prostitution is used as a symbol for idolatry. So this became an idolatrous thing to the Israelites, going to this ephod rather than to the Lord's true priests. And remember, prostitution is used as a symbol for idolatry because the Lord meant two relationships in a man's life to be exclusive. You know, we can have many siblings and love them all. We can have many friends and love them all. Why, you can even have people who are like second parents. You know, your in-laws, if you're really close, could be like a second set of parents and so forth. But we are only meant to have one wife, and a man is only meant to have one God. And so prostitution regarding women is used as a parallel with idolatry regarding God, since both are breaking what the Lord had meant to be an exclusive relationship in the beginning. So he compares this golden ephod to idolatry. And this is a sad blight on Gideon's judgeship. This man who had been so faithful up till this point made a bad error here. Verse 28, thus Midian was subdued before the children of Israel, so that they lifted their heads no more. And the country was quiet for 40 years in the days of Gideon. So the result of this was that Midian was totally subdued by Gideon conquering them, and they dared attack Israel no more. So the result of all this is that Midian was totally subdued by Gideon conquering them, and they dared raise their heads no more. So the result is that Israel has peace that lasts 40 years during Gideon's judgeship. Verse 29, then Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house. And remember, Jerubbaal was another name for Gideon. It meant let Baal contend with him, which of course Baal, being false, never did. So he goes back to his own house, which was in Ophrah of the Abiezrites, and he judges Israel from there. So again, there is no central location for a strong centralized government. He just acts as judge from his own house, and people can come to him as they need him. Verse 30, Gideon had 70 sons who were his own offspring, for he had many wives. So Gideon's household grows very large with sons, 70 of them, and that's because he had many wives. And this was unfortunately common at the time among the rich noblemen, is that they indulged themselves in polygamy. Rather than having a lot of servants and letting your female servants marry your male servants, well, you just have a bunch of servants and you marry your female servants yourself. And if you can afford a lot of women, why not have multiple wives besides these slave wives? And so these rich men would indulge themselves, and if the poor didn't get a wife because they couldn't afford it, well, too bad for them. So this was unfortunate, but it was what they did back then, and Gideon, unfortunately, got caught up in it. Verse 31, and his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, whose name he called Abimelech. So he has a concubine. Again, this was a slave wife, a woman whom you married, but you kept her a slave. She had none of the privileges of a free wife. So she was still your slave, but you had sexual privileges with her. She was from Shechem, a city whose name means shoulder. It was another city in Manasseh, where Ophrah was. She bears him a son whom he calls Abimelech, which means my father is king. Now this is interesting because number one, Gideon had refused kingship earlier. And number two, this is surely an ambitious name for the son of a slave. So the question is, was this her idea, not his? And some Hebrew manuscripts do say she called him Abimelech, not he. So this slave, who became the slave wife of this mighty judge, apparently has ambitions for her son, naming him son of a king. And this is just setting up trouble later, as we'll see next time. Verse 32. Now Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a good old age, and was buried in the tomb of Joash, his father, in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. So he dies at a good old age. And as we said, if he was in his 30s when he did the conquest, he was in his 70s or maybe around 80 when he died, which was a good old age at the time. And he was buried in peace in his father's tomb in Ophrah of the Abiezrites, which was about the best anybody could hope for in their death at the time. Verse 33. So it was, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-Berith their god. So after his death, this sad cycle of the book of Judges starts once again. Israel turns away from Jehovah, their own god, to play the harlot, to act the prostitute with the Baals, the lords, the master idols. And this time they made Baal-Berith, the lord or master of the covenant, their new god. Verse 34. Thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side. So not only did they get into false worship, but these sons of Israel, their representatives, didn't remember Yahweh their God, even after he had rescued them from all their enemies who surrounded them. Remember, Midian had wanted to wipe them out and destroy them, and Yahweh rescued them. But now they turn on him and said, we want to serve Baal-Berith instead. Well, this was major ingratitude. And the ingratitude was not just to Yahweh, but verse 35, nor did they show kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, in accordance with the good he had done for Israel. So they also forgot to show any gratitude to Jerubbaal's family, which remember that was Gideon. And so they failed to show any gratitude to Jerubbaal, to Gideon's family, even after all he had done for Israel. So when they treat God one way, they'll treat his servants the same way. And so they were ungrateful to God. They were certainly ungrateful to his servant Gideon. And we'll see how deeply their ingratitude went in our next message. But Gideon's victory over the Midianite forces was complete. Yet he also had victory over temptation when the people offered him the throne and he rightly refused it. Still, his self-guided attempts to establish a form of worship was a snare to him and his family. And this is an example of the theme of Judges. What happens when you do what is right in your own eyes, rather than doing what is right in the sight of God, as he says in his word. When Gideon died, the people turned right back to idolatry. It seems that only when the strong leader was serving God were they willing to serve him. And when the strong leader was gone, they just didn't care that much. So we should ask ourselves, do we only serve God faithfully when we have strong leadership that tells us to? Or do we truly serve him from the heart? Well, these are important questions we can all ask ourselves, and important lessons from the book of Judges.
Israel's faithfulness to Jehovah God fades shortly after the death of their strong leader, Gideon, causing them to once again fall into idolatry. We'll even see in the next program that the Israelites stoop to new lows of treachery, treason, and deceit. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on Gideon's snare. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Book of Judges with the usurper Abimelech. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you listen to this program, you are becoming more and more motivated to study God's Word. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also offer a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say so long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.